from LPM.
Louisville Public Media.
Support for LPM podcasts comes from the Eye Care Institute and Butchertown Clinical Trials, where they strive for diversity, equity, and inclusion within their staff, patients, and clinical trial participants. To learn more, visit butchertown.clinic.
I'm very interested in helping people awaken, white people awaken to the ways that our lives have been blessed. I know this is a kind of an incendiary word, but privileged.
From Louisville Public Media, this is Five Things, the show that tells a life story through the objects we treasure. I'm Tara Anderson. This week's episode is an update from one of our previous guests, Joe Phelps. He was originally on the show in May of 2017 when he spoke about the unexpected loss of his son, his work as pastor of Highland Baptist Church, and that one time he got to hang out with Bruce Springsteen. It's still one of my very favorite episodes we've ever done. If you haven't heard it yet, I encourage you to go back and listen. Last fall, I reached out to him for a follow-up conversation because I'd heard he had retired from Highland Baptist, and I was curious about what he was doing. He says, "I now go by former, not retired, pastor of Highland Baptist Church. I'm now the justice coordinator for the Earth and Spirit Center and also co-chair of Empower West Louisville, a black-white clergy coalition working for justice in West Louisville." We also talked about what led to his desire for a change and what else he's doing with his time these days. It's been over a year since we did the interview for Five Things with you. And at that point, you must have been thinking about retirement, but you didn't talk to me about it.
That's true. That's true.
When did you start to think about retiring?
I suppose I began to wonder about a change a year or so before I actually announced a change. Mm-hmm. So it had been some months. I began to notice that my battery, if you will, would not recharge. Mm. It just would not take a charge like it did back in the day when I could kind of keep going and keep doing the work that was required. Yeah, and so I knew the time was coming, and it took some time to get there, but it was a decision that seemed right, and it continues to seem right.
Yeah. So how long have you officially been retired at this point?
I think it would be coming on 10 months.
Okay.
Yeah, 10 months.
So what's it like for you
now?
Wow. You were at Highland Baptist
I was at Highland Baptist Church, a wonderful congregation, for 21 years.
Yeah.
And we were a church. It is a church that has a dynamism and a life to it that was completely enthralling, and I loved every minute of being there. So when I could feel my battery not charging, I knew that I needed to step aside because that wonderful church needs a pastor that's running on all cylinders. Mm. And so they're in the process of looking for that person, and for me, I'm now kind of coming into what's next for me. I'm kind of moving from being Reverend Joe Phelps, pastor of Highland Baptist Church, through a season of Joe Phelps, retired pastor of Highland Baptist Church, to now just Joe Phelps, a person who loved being a pastor and now is doing new things.
Mm-hmm.
And the new things are kind of revealing themselves as the days and weeks go on. So it's been fun.
I noticed your email address is just Joe Phelps.
Yes, just Joe
so
Phelps.
So that's how you're thinking of yourself. That must be a real shift because you've been in a leadership position and you've been in this position of authority.
Right.
When someone meets you, oh, you're a pastor of a church, and they immediately have a certain impression of you.
Right.
So when you're at a party,
yeah.
Oh, hi, Joe, nice to meet you.
Yes.
What do you do?
Yes, yes. And immediately the conversation will shift when you say, well, I'm a minister of a church. You either get people who want to tell you a bad church story
or
a bad church joke,
right,
or they want to shock you because you're a minister, so they'll tell you a dirty joke just to see how you handle it. Or they'll explain to you why they don't go to church.
Right.
So to be able to say, I'm just Joe Phelps, I'm proud of the ministry. I'm still a minister. I'm a minister at large throughout the city of Louisville. And yeah, but to not be a person who has authority in that way is at first disorienting, but ultimately it's liberating.
When you say you're a minister at large throughout the city, what do you mean by that?
Well, I still, I've retired as a pastor of a church, but I'm still an ordained minister, mm-hmm. and I still am a Christian minister who operates out of that orientation. Mm-hmm. My congregation, my parish now is whoever needs me.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes my neighbors, which I've lived on in the same home. We've lived in the same home for 21 years. I'm just now meeting my neighbors because I never needed neighbors. My home was sort of a sanctuary where I went and kind of hibernated. Yeah. Now I don't have a church. I both need neighbors, but I also know my neighbors. I'm getting to know my neighbors. And it's kind of a beautiful discovery. I'm kind of conjugating my neighborhood. I'm learning like where the water flows, literally. We live on the top of a hill, and where does this water go? How's it connect to Beargrass Creek? And where is this relative to the plantations that are all around me? Was my property, my little house, was it part of a plantation? Or how does it fit into the story, the larger story?
Mm-hmm.
And I find myself doing that in lots of ways. As a Baptist, I've had to kind of go back and ask the questions. How did I get here? And how do we believe what we believe? And mm-hmm. it's been really eye-opening and awakening for me.
I know you've also been, would you say, politically active in the past?
Yes.
Is that something that you're continuing now?
If by political you mean an advocate for justice, mm-hmm. Yes. I am the co-chair of Empower West Louisville with Dr. Kevin Cosby, the pastor of St. Stephen and Simmons College president. We continue that work and want to see it grow and multiply. I'm also involved in some other projects that are political, meaning calling for justice.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been political in the sense of trying to be partisan.
Uh-huh.
But this is a really tough time. Let's just say that it's almost impossible to even quote the words of Jesus and not sound political, because Jesus' words are political.
Yeah.
When he says, I was a stranger and you welcomed me, if you quote that, well, then you're saying something partisan.
Yes.
Well, I'm quoting Jesus. So
I understand. I'm professionally nonpartisan as well. And
yes.
It's very challenging.
It is. And I'm glad in some ways to be liberated from the restriction of partisan politics. I don't have a bumper sticker on my car now, but I could if I wanted to.
And that was something you felt that you couldn't do as the pastor of a church?
Yes, mm-hmm. I tried not to. I mean, my politics, my views on right and wrong and my moral values, you know, all I have to do is name some of them,
mm-hmm.
and people can categorize me as a, quote, liberal or a Democrat. And I guess that's true. And this will sound really smug, but I try to derive my values from the life and teachings of Jesus. And so no matter what you believe about him as the Son of God or all of that, those values and the value of and the power of love, that's my message. That's my only message. And so a lot of things get heard by the hearer that the speaker does or doesn't intend. So if it sounds partisan to you, well, then maybe it's speaking to you. So it's complicated. And you know, obviously there are people that I would rather have elected than not elected. But when those other people are elected, I don't get to give up because love doesn't give up. And so, you know, we're recording this a couple of days after the elections, and not all the people won who I wanted to win, but we keep going back. We keep fighting in the name of love.
much time for music in your life these days?
Oh, thank you for asking that. That was a great question. I did it. Let the record show, I did not feed that question to her. we're going to see Susan Tedeschi and Derek Trucks tonight at the Palace next door to where we are.
Nice.
I am married to a person who has had a musical sophistication since her high school years. Mm-hmm. We're always listening to music. We went to see Boz Scaggs last week. Oh my gosh, at 74 years old or however old he is, he sings so pure and beautifully. And it's just so amazing to watch an artist do their thing. So yeah, we get to hear music. We get to go to some good concerts. Because I'm married well, we've got a really good vinyl collection.
Excellent.
Yeah. And we listen to WFPK all the time.
Thank you. Unprompted shout
Unsolicited.
Out. I appreciate it. Yes. Do you have grandkids?
I do.
I thought you did.
I have Maximilian Oscar Scremmen and his sister Catherine Viola Scremmen. Mm. They are 8 and 6.
Right. And they live in Florida.
In Jacksonville Beach, Florida.
Mm-hmm. Do you get to see them any more often since you retired?
Yes, we do. We are our goal for 2019 is to spend at least 4 chunks of time, like a week or two, with them.
Mm-hmm.
They're magical, and they are growing so fast. So you got to get there as often as you can, or get them up here as often as we can, or meet them somewhere. We met them this summer. They were on their way up to Yellowstone in a trailer vacation, and we met them in Missouri.
Oh, fun. So what do you see in the next few years for you?
I'm very interested in helping people awaken white people, especially white males, especially white Baptist males, people just like me, awaken to the ways that our lives have been blessed. I know this is a kind of an incendiary word, but privileged, not as a way to shame us, but as a way to invite us to a life of generosity. Men have had such privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And my goodness, if we don't see it now, we are having opportunities to see it now. I'm sorry we've not seen it sooner. I'm seeing that for my own life. And it's interesting because I didn't grow up in a life that would look like privilege. In fact, my father grew up in a kind of Appalachian, West Virginia town. It was not privilege by any traditional interpretation, but, oh my goodness, there's just privilege after privilege that allowed me to grow and have the life that I've had. So I'm very excited about that. I want to find a way, or I want to be part of a conversation that helps pass on faith and faith's values and wisdom to the millennial generation, to the next generation.
Mm.
They're voting with their feet about church, and the outcome is not promising right now. I do believe the church is resilient and will adapt, but we're losing lots of people who are spiritual but not religious, mm-hmm. or just don't want to do it in the way that it's been done. But I just run into people all the time who are like, man, tell me how to help with the racial inequities, or help. What can I do? People are looking for ways to be real and connect and to be generous that are beyond superficial kind of acts of mercy. But it's complicated. When you start talking about justice, first of all, man, you better strap on your chin strap, because it's going to be a hard game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lifelong game. That's why you need communities of people who gather together and believe in hope and sing songs of faith. You know, we're back to church.
Yeah.
So interesting. But I do feel called to that work as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You said speaking about privilege may seem a little incendiary. Can you talk a little more about that?
Sure. People don't like generally, I find people resistant and rejecting the idea of privilege, that somehow they've had it better than Black Americans. And I think because they feel like it's an accusation, you stole this. So I understand that. I've felt that. I don't think naming one's privilege is a shaming. It's a recognizing and then an invitation that follows it. What are you going to do with it now? Some people may say, like Zacchaeus did in Luke 19, half of what I have I'm going to give to the poor, and if I've defrauded anyone, I'm going to pay them back, you know, four times over. But others may say, I have this position of power, and I'm going to begin to think about my power differently, and how can I share power? Everyone has a role to play. Not everyone's going to have to be the person out on the front line carrying a placard or throwing a rock. You know, that's, well, not the throwing a rock, but carrying a placard, protesting, making a statement. That's not everyone's call. Others are back in the back, but supporting in other ways. And I just think people are looking for those ways to be part of something good. Democrats and Republicans want to do good. I know people who voted for Donald Trump who are wonderful people.
Of course.
So let's find a way to get our goodness together. That's what I want.
So what does your call look like in this regard?
Well, that's unfolding. I'm talking to a couple of organizations. I thought about starting my own organization, but my goodness, that's the last thing I want to do is run another organization. I'm waiting to see. I won't work full-time, but I would like to do something with some of the hours of my week and with a lot of my energy to advance the work of love. We live in a world that is both sacred and scared. And I'm celebrating more and more the sacredness of it. You know, the ability to take a trip to Cumberland Falls the last couple of days. The beauty of life, the sacredness of life. But the world's so scared right now. We just came out of this election, which was really an election about fear. And that's where I feel like the message of love has to find a way to be part of that conversation, because love is the only remedy. There's not enough PAC money. There's not enough 30-second ads or slick postcards that can make people change. People only change by love. So you got to do the work somehow.
See, you have some notes with you.
I do, but they're so crazy. I did want to talk about, if we could, here's something that takes my time. I got connected to a young man who is in the Metro jail. He's now, this time, been in there for 3 years awaiting murder trial. And his story is one that causes me to have to realize that I have been so blessed and privileged by the life I've lived and the parents I was born to and the education I received and the people who nurtured me and all the safety nets that were under me, because the man I visit had none of those. None of those. In fact, everything that came to him pushed him farther down and down and down. So we can't forget people in jail. They are the forgotten ones. And boy, I think there's a reason that Jesus said, when did you take care of me? When I was in prison and you visited me. Well, when was that? When you did it to the least of these. You did it to me. So, yeah, a jail's a great place to find Jesus.
So you just go and visit this gentleman on a regular basis? And
I do, and I've set up, I have to pay for him to be able to call me. He calls once a week. And he writes me probably two or three times a week. And I send him books because, well, the library, there's just so many things that don't work at Metro. And especially for someone who's in kind of isolated circumstances, there's not much he gets except for what I send him. So, yeah, I go, I talk to him, send him letters, send him postcards wherever I go, man. He has not felt the wind on his face in 3 years.
Sounds like you're being his family for him.
I'm the only person he has. Well, there's some people from Highland who also write, and blessed are they. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like this has been a really powerful experience for you.
Yes, yes. Deeply personal for me. This is how my life goes. The Sunday before the incident that he was arrested for happened, he just happened to visit Highland Baptist Church. You know, maybe that was just a coincidence or whatever. It brought us together. Because when I heard what happened, I went to see him and been seeing him ever since.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is this the first time that you have had a relationship with somebody who's incarcerated? Is this your first experience with the system?
I've had multiple experiences with the system, but not one like this where someone is in jail year after year, and especially in the local jail.
Yeah.
I mean, our metro jail wasn't meant to be a place where someone lived for 3 years.
Right.
And I say this time because he had already spent a year in jail earlier for something he did not do, and then was released because he did not do it. So, yeah, there are a lot of good people in that system, but the system is broken. And it reflects on our society. And what's the saying about a chain is only strong as its weakest link? And these women and men in jail, there's not one there that doesn't have some story that would break your heart. So,
yeah. Well, you're doing what you can.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. You do what you can. My friend Clay Calloway says, you do what you can while you can.
There you go.
That's it.
Well, thank you for coming back in to talk to
me. Oh, I've loved talking to you, Tara. It's always fun, and maybe it's because the headphones make me sound like I'm on public radio, that it's always a fun conversation.
You are on public radio.
How about that?
Isn't that exciting?
It is.
Thanks again to Joe Phelps for coming back in and filling us in. Our show was produced, edited, and mixed by me, with editing oversight from Laura Ellis. Our theme music is by Alex Wright. You can get more information on our show at WFPL.org. We'll see you in 2 weeks with another full-length episode, the last of this season. Thanks for listening.